Hi, this is Sean Halter, host of the CMO Suite podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and catch up on all the previous episodes at www.thecmosuite.com. Don't forget to visit marketingcasts.com to find even more custom curated marketing podcasts just like this one. That's marketingcasts.com. This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconnex. Uconnex provides digital solutions and teams to brand CMOs, VPs, and marketers looking for true transparency in the biddable media space. From paid social and PPC to complex platforms like the Trade Desk, brands from across the world have connected to Uconnex. Visit them today at uconnex.com. And No Kid Hungry. We're proud to promote No Kid Hungry and their many initiatives to help kids in need of meals. Visit them at nokidhungry.org. This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. Winmo tracks every national advertiser, their agency relationships, and key executives within each organization. Get instant media spend, competitor tracking, and industry trend analysis in one easy-to-use application that integrates with all major CRM platforms. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite. Finally, the CMO Suite is presented by thecmocouncil.org as their official marketers podcast. The Chief Marketing Officer Council is the only global network of executives specifically dedicated to high-level knowledge exchange, thought leadership, and personal relationship building among senior corporate marketing leaders and brand decision makers. The CMO Council's 15,000 plus members control more than $550 billion in aggregated annual marketing expenditures and run complex distributed marketing and sales operations worldwide. For more information on membership, visit thecmocouncil.org. Let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You are listening to the CMO Suite, presented by Connectivity Holdings and Winmo. I am your host, Sean Halter, and I am incredibly excited. I don't want to say this podcast is 4 years in the making, but it's almost 4 years in the making. We are talking today to Lisa Eichberger, who has been a brand marketing executive for many years. Most recently was the head of brand marketing and sponsorship at Farmers Insurance Group, but also spent some time at Jenny Craig. We're going to get into that a little bit, and Vonage, and out on the West Coast. Thank you for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to see you.
It is the chaos of COVID season for us, Lisa. It's pretty crazy. We started season four, which we are wrapping with just a couple of episodes, and you are one of those. We started back in March, and we recorded a bunch of episodes, and then we held them because we weren't really entirely sure what to do. Everything was going chaotic. And then we held them so long that then we were like, well, we can't run these exactly the way they are now because that's going to sound weird. So then we brought everybody back remotely and did kind of these post parts of the episode. And now we're, I guess I'd say we're fairly caught up. But that said, it has been a little bit kooky. I know it's been crazy in New York. It's certainly been crazy out on the West Coast as well. So how do you feel like you are reassimilating to what is the new normal?
Well, you know, I've always been pretty resilient, so I guess I'm just kind of rolling with it the best I can. I mean, there's certain things that are certainly different. You know, my clothing choices are a big change, and I don't know that I've had on real shoes in 6 months, but
I put on pants yesterday. I was so proud of myself. Crazy. Did you grow up out on the West Coast? I feel like that's where you went to school. So is that where you grew up?
Yeah, I grew up. I'm a Los Angeles native. I lived here most of my life. And then I've spent some time in Atlanta and New Jersey and the East Coast and managed to kind of work my way back towards the West Coast. But yeah, I love both sides of the country. I haven't spent much time in the middle, but this is home.
So you grew up in LA. Brothers and sisters at all? Only child?
Only child with a half brother.
Okay. So how was growing up in Los Angeles? I know you said you did end up spending some time in other parts of the country. Was it just that's kind of what you knew? And so, you know, you headed to the beach on the weekends and you lived that California lifestyle?
You know, my family aren't beach people. I am, although I don't like going to the beach. I'm an ocean swimmer, but I don't ever go to the beach except for to like walk across it and get in the water. So yeah, growing up here, I mean, I think wherever you grow up, you don't know any different. I mean, we grew up without winters and without seasons. So that was, you know, when I first moved to the East Coast, I was like a toddler trying to figure out how to deal with snow. But
you said you're an ocean swimmer. I feel like you may have told me once before. So do you do triathlons or had you done triathlons in the past?
Yeah, I am. But this season has been shot for everybody for any sort of athletic racing and competition. But yeah, I'm a triathlete.
My waist can tell you that. Yes, I haven't been able
all
to.
All of us. all of us. Yeah. But yeah, just somehow this year has been a big swimming year. Once the beaches opened back up in May, we've been in the water pretty much constantly. I've been swimming as much as 10 miles a week in the ocean. So it's been a big swim year.
So I used to run when my knees could hold out. I did one triathlon and the swimming was just the hardest part. And the ocean is crazy compared to swimming, training in a pool of some sort. It's not the same. So kudos to you for being able to navigate it. That's for sure.
Well, thank you.
Do you feel like in some ways that's a part of your personality? Is that kind of when you determine to do something, you just jump in the water and swim your way through it?
You know, that's an interesting question. And I do feel like it's a huge part of my personality. You know, I've done a couple Ironman distance triathlons and, you know, it's a 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike ride and a 26 mile run. And when you say that out loud, it just sounds kind of stupid and impossible. And you know, before you've ever done one, it is almost stupid and impossible. But when I compare that to the rest of things you do in life, it's like any massive project. You build a plan, you work the plan, and by the time you get to the end of it, if you've done things as you know, have intended, you achieve it. And so it's been, you know, something for me that's really been great at setting goals and helping me know I can kind of get through whatever.
And maybe that resiliency is something we're all trying to navigate and learn through what this year is, because none of us, look, any of us that have any seasoning on us of any years, we've been through some good times and some bad times,
right?
Nothing like this. So it's even been hard to kind of know how to prep for this to some extent. But I think the point you made, you know, even just a few minutes in on this is a very relevant point, which is even when something seems so daunting, even when you say something out loud, like, there's no way I can accomplish this. It's too big. It's too grand. It's not going to happen. I'm never going to get, you know, Lisa on my podcast. It's just not going to happen. Then you just persevere. You work your way through it. You remember most days to call it Farmers Insurance and not the other one that's out there in the marketplace, although I've been guilty of both sometimes. But do you feel like that is also what's going to help put you in a position that there's nothing you can't accomplish, whatever that next step is for you in this industry? You figure it out, you build your plan, and you navigate through it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, it's a combination of your perseverance and then flexibility. You know, going back to the athletic analogy, I mean, things get in the way, life gets in the way, injuries happen, things change, COVID, you know, there are things that just, you know, change your trajectory, but they don't need to change your your ability or your confidence to keep going through. And, you know, what I can't remember the war quote, but, you know, when you're going through hell, keep going. I should know who that is. Churchill, right? I think that's, you know, kind of how a lot of us are dealing with this COVID scenario. I think, you know, it's how you get through any massive change in a business scenario when, you know, you have a competitive threat that comes up you're not expecting. You have to pivot. You have to make new decisions. But you also have to kind of keep your eye on the end game and make sure you're working towards a goal and have a plan on how to get there.
And my dad would always say, don't look back. Just whatever it is, don't look back. Keep going. Whatever it is in front of you.
Right.
You've been on both sides of this industry to some extent. You spent a little bit of time as an account executive at Ogilvy. And what caused you to decide maybe you wanted to jump into a different direction to be more on the client-facing side? Do you remember back to those days?
Yeah, I do. I actually started at Poppy Tyson, a division of Bozell, way back in the day, and I think they're long gone, and then went to Ogilvy. And I absolutely loved the advertising industry. You know, my mother tells me stories when I was like just a little kid, I would sing the Burger King jingle in my sleep. You know, I love jingles. I love ads. I've always, you know, just kind of loved the whole space. And I was working for Ogilvy. I was working on the PacBell Mobile Services account, which at the time was, you know, the launch of PacBell, their mobile phones. Back in the days when in Los Angeles, penetration of cell phones was at 9%. If you can imagine, you know, only one in nine people having a phone.
What's a cell phone?
Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. And the New York office of Ogilvy pitched and won a competitive account, and the Los Angeles, a bigger account. So Los Angeles had to resign PacBell. And they let go everyone on the team except me. And I had tremendous survivor's guilt, but I was there, I think, really just to wind down the billing. And then I got put on new business and I worked on some other stuff briefly. And PacBell called and said, hey, do you want to come work for us as an advertising manager? And I went, huh, you know, client side work had never really crossed my mind, but it was like, okay, you know, what the heck? And then they, you know, they told me kind of the difference in pay between client and agency. And I went, that's even more interesting.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah. And so, you know, I switched over to the dark side or whatever you want to call it. And I, about 3 days in, realized this job I'd loved my whole life, I hated it. Like Ogilvy was lovely. I had loved advertising. And then I went client side and I'm like, this is so much better for me. For me, it was the ability to really have more control over my destiny. And as an agency person, I think, you know, great client agency relationships, you've got the agency built in on the strategy and in on the planning and in on everything. That's not always the case. And especially as kind of a junior account person, you just kind of get up in the morning, whatever plans you've laid out. If the client says jump, you say, okay, and you jump a different direction from what you'd planned in the morning. Yeah. So I ended up loving the client side. And, I'll never say never. I could potentially end up back on the agency side. Sure. But I'd certainly want to be working with clients that treat their agencies as a partner. And, you know, that's one of the things I've always tried to do as an agency or as a client, you know, on the other side of the fence. But it's a different relationship.
You know, it's funny you brought up the jingle piece. I talked to, obviously, a lot of marketers. A lot of us have that as an embedded part of our childhood, though, you know, that those jingles, as much as some people may feel like the time maybe has already passed for a jingle to resonate. You know, I was telling somebody the other day, I watched more for the commercials sometimes than the shows I was watching, and they do still impact. And certainly I'm assuming that you found as much when you were at Farmers.
You know, I am a huge believer in, you know, we call them mnemonics or call them, you know, audio branding. There's, you know, a bunch of different names for them, but I find them to be a, you know, an easy way to be memorable and to be consistent. And yeah, Farmers, you know, we are Farmers, sticks in everyone's head.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
In my Vonage days, one of the things I did was I brought back the woohoo, woohoo, hoo, which, you know, if you know the Vonage ads, that will now be in your head for the rest of the day. And I'm sorry.
It's a lot.
Yeah, exactly. But it's, you know, it's a little bit of a cheat, maybe, but at the same time, it's memorable. And as long as it's likable, you know, I think it really works to help build a brand and to create continuity. And especially, I mean, I think as we move, I mean, heck, you and I are here, we are on a podcast, right? We're moving to a more audio environment. You know, it's almost like we're going back in time when you used to listen to like the radio shows. But audio is huge again. And, you know, when you think about, I don't want to say her name out loud because she'll talk back to me, but Alexa, you know, everything's audio. There's a lot of value in maintaining those audio brands. And I think a lot of brands are doing a really, really nice job with it.
A few things to unpack there. First of all, you know, the poor kid whose name is Alexa, you know,
right. She's going to talk if you say it too loud. And she, oh, no, I'm on a headset. She won't hear you. Good.
Running around. Not sure if the parents are yelling at her or the right. Or what it is. Siri's the same way. I was, you know, trying to get something to work last night. I had the wrong Siri operating. But, you know, you talked about the basically audio. And that's something that I do feel like brands don't spend nearly enough time on. I'm friends with Allison Griffin, who was over at Intel for quite a while. And obviously, that's a great, example of the same thing. We spend so much time these days in a digital world and in attribution and looking at reports and making sure we've got the right dashboards. And those are all relevant. But damn, if a 5 or 6 second little clip of some audio can't just create memorability that is free to some extent, you know, mm-hmm. that people want to push out, that people can just hear, you know, 5 seconds and know the name of the brand, and perhaps it's a little bit of a lost art. I'm not sure. So
right, yeah, I think it's an art. I also think there's a a challenge in not overexposing, and it's finding that right balance. I just read an article, I think yesterday, in one of the trades that Netflix has one of the most memorable little sounds, but given the pandemic and people's binge watching, people have kind of burned out on it. And so it's finding where's the right place to put it and do you modify it a little? I mean, that was one of the things we did at Vonage was we played with it some. And even at Farmers, we, you know, would occasionally just play with it a little. Once it's known, you can do that.
Hell, I'm so old that, you know, the AOL thing still sticks.
You got mail.
I mean, oh my God, you know, if you didn't hear that, that was like, you know, that was the precursor to social media that these kids don't understand. You get a like or a comment on your social media page and you think you've won. We used to all sit by these computers and we'd hear that noise. I got an email. Could you imagine that now? I mean, oh my God, it'd go off 500 times. We would be banging our heads, you know, against a piece of glass and be happier about it.
There are people in my life who have the little ding when they get an email, and I don't understand, but maybe they just don't get enough email.
And so talk to me a little bit about your time after that. It looks like you made your way to Vonage. What was the journey from cellular over to Vonage like, and why did you land there specifically?
You know, I had some interesting kind of steps along the way. And I think of one of those, I guess, I don't even know if it would be considered a meme. It's an old graph, but there's a thing that I've seen where it says, you know, success is this line that goes up and to the right. And that's what people think. And then the reality is success is this, you know, twirly noodle that looks like one of those straws that we used to have as kids with all the twists and turns and the things that took you on a journey that actually got you to your end game. And I think, you know, my time between Singular, AT&T, whatever brand you want to call it, and Vonage and Farmers, there's, you know, there are a bunch of steps along the way that really helped me learn who I am and what I like and what I'm good at. And I've enjoyed the journey. So, you know, I left Singular. I think it may have been AT&T at that point. I went to a wireless startup called Helio. It was a small startup. Interesting enough with the, it was a joint venture between the guys who founded AOL and who founded SK Telecom. And that was an adventure. It was, you know, it was a wireless startup. It was during a period where there were over 100 wireless startups in the marketplace. And we were aimed at the Korean youth market. I mean, that's how many niche markets there were. And, you know, it was the Wild West and it was a wild ride. And I stayed on with them until their launch. And then I left and took just a little bit of a break. And then I actually went back to the agency side for kind of a hot minute in a sales role. My dad's always kind of helped influence my career. And one of the things he's said to me is, you know, honey, you need to try your hand at sales. And so I said, okay, you know, I'll try this new business gig. It'll be at an ad agency. One of their clients at the time was Verizon. It felt very safe. It was an ad agency. It was, you know, they had wireless. I kind of got the space and I, you know, tried to, you know, my hand at this new business. And I did a pretty darn good job at it. And I hated it. I mean, I'm just not, you know, I'm not a salesperson at heart. And so I left that role and I actually took a little break from corporate America and I was consulting and, you know, doing some contract work, but I also worked as a personal trainer at an Equinox.
That's great.
And I loved it. You know, I knew it wasn't a long-term career, but it was an opportunity for me to do something totally different. At one point in my life, I've always been very athletic and I thought maybe I'll, you know, open a gym. And working in a gym, I realized, nope, I don't want to open a gym. So again, you know, I was trying my hand at things and I feel like I'm so lucky, or I mean, I'm kind of a believer in making your own luck, but lucky that I've had the ability to test things, you know, for myself and try them and not just do stuff because I'm doing it. So, you know, I tried my hand at sales. I tried my hand kind of, you know, could I open a gym? None of those things made a lot of sense. And so while I was working at this gym and consulting on the side, you know, I was doing a lot of, you know, really fun work with a bunch of different companies. The CMO of Singular had become the CEO of Vonage. And he called me up and he's like, you know, I know when you moved to Atlanta, you weren't loving Georgia, but would you consider coming to New Jersey for 8 weeks for a, you know, a marketing project? And I said, sure. So, you know, I took a leave of absence from the personal training gig, which, you know, whatever that was. And next thing I knew, 8 weeks turned into 4 years. And I was at, you know, working as the vice president of marketing at Vonage and loved it. Loved New Jersey, loved the job. And, you know. That was my next shift.
You talked in the middle there again, just about giving yourself a chance to be able to test and try. And I think sometimes we don't give ourselves enough of that. If you're very driven, it's hard because you're so driven. The wheel doesn't stop. You have to stay on it. But if there's anything I feel like I've seen from COVID on the positive side, it's that a lot of people, either through circumstances or through opportunity, have had to just stop for a moment and reassess. And realize, you know, the world will still travel on even if I'm not in this specific position. At the same time, what a chance to be able to just re-level set ourselves to some extent and reset, just reset. You know, that's so hard when you become a person in a certain kind of position, whether you're an entrepreneur or you're in a high position at a company and you've got people underneath you. It's hard to be able to sometimes just go, I just don't want to do this anymore. There's so many people that are relying upon you that you feel this sense of guilt. And man, that's a hard thing. Guilt is such a crazy thing in our lives that we don't give ourselves enough chance to be able to say, let me just reset. So it's,
well, and I think ego too. I mean, there's guilt, and there's ego, and then there's the practicality of it. You know, I say I was lucky that I was able to do some of this stuff. I've also always been financially conservative, and as a result, I had a good backstop. And it's something, you know, when I'm talking to especially younger women and mentoring, it's like, save some money, have that little, you know, I call it an FU fund, you know, have the ability to not be trapped by something you hate. And you know, that was when I left the, you know, the ad agency job, that was kind of the in-between job that was in that sales role, I didn't like what I was doing. And if I hadn't had a little cash in the bank, I would have been stuck every day going in doing something I really did not enjoy. And instead I was able to take that step back, reset, think about what's next. And then also, you know, kind of at the time, it actually took swallowing my pride to go and take a personal training job. I mean, and I did it for, you know, for very logical reasons, but I'll tell you, there were people who looked down their noses at me and said, oh, you left this executive job as a vice president and blah, blah, blah. And, that, and now you're personal training. It's like, there's no shame in that. Like I loved what I was doing. I was learning, I was doing something new, and I was flexing different muscles, and I don't regret it for 1 second. But
I hope more executives take the chance to be able to, again, allow themselves to do many of the things that you just said. And even to that, to your extent, talking to younger people in marketing, whether they be female or male, or, you know, saving a bit, not having to live up to what you think everybody else's expectations are. I mean, look, our business is no different. We've had to adapt around the world of COVID and clients changing what they're doing. But thank goodness my father instilled in me, you know, save, because saving is what has allowed us to not just have to take every single piece of business that's out there. Desperation is, you know, is a horrible thing. If you have the chance to be able to just live a normal life, try to put a little money in the bank, it will save you in those moments when perhaps you want to be able to pivot and give you the chance to not have to be miserable. You spent also a little bit of time at Jenny Craig. And how was that stop for you? Because that was back in California.
It was. You know, Jenny Craig was just such a great opportunity. I'd been at Vonage for about 4 years. I loved my job. I wasn't looking. I was, you know, doing what I thought was really good work. We won, you know, a Gold Lion for some of the advertising we were doing, which was just, you know, fun. And we were driving the business and things were going really, really well. And a recruiter called me, you know, for this CMO job in San Diego, in kind of that health and wellness space, which, you know, again, my personal passion lies, you know, to a certain extent, at least from a personal perspective, in that fitness, health, wellness. And I really couldn't walk away from it. And, you know, one of the pluses also was that Jenny Craig at the time was owned by Nestle. And I really loved the idea of getting some of that classical, you know, Nestle marketing training, which, you know, to me really appealed.
Nestle and Mondelez, it's so crazy. There's so many people that I talk to that have come through just those two companies, you know?
Right. P&G, right? Yeah, I mean, that's like some of the classic marketing training. Yeah. And yeah, I've worked for a couple of guys who are P&G, you know, brand managers in their early days. And I feel like I kind of got that P&G training and I wanted to learn a little bit about the Nestle side. So, you know, I took the job. It was a ton of fun. It was, you know, the company was in need of turnaround and, you know, the brand I think had, you know, it was a dated brand and we had an opportunity to do some really great work. Unfortunately for me, Nestle sold the brand to private equity. And as part of that, they already had a leadership team in place. And I opted to take a package and again, took a little break, traveled, you know, did an Ironman, went around the world and, I worked in a bike shop for a couple of months because I wanted to learn how to actually like repair my own bike. And of course, the bike shop wouldn't let me anywhere near the mechanics section. So that was, you know, that was like, I don't know, 8 weeks or something. I was like, okay, well, that was interesting, but it kept me from being bored and lonely. And then I hunkered down and going back to that whole, you know, making sure you're doing the right thing. I actually hired a career coach and I spent a couple of months with a woman, you know, just really going through what do I want to do when I grow up? You know, and at that point I was pretty well grown up, but what's the right thing? What do I love? What am I good at? And, I think the really good news is it came back that marketing is where my heart really is. And, you know, we investigated all kinds of different paths that had interest to me. And that was what, we just kind of came back around. And so she helped me. And one of the things that was, I think, the best learning from that time with her was I created kind of a checklist of the things I had to have in my next job, the things I wanted to have in my next job, and then the things that were deal breakers. Like I just couldn't do it. And I think like a lot of ambitious people, I would just kind of chase the next shiny object while I was looking for that next gig. And I wanted, you know, I really wanted the right job. And I feel that way always. Like, I don't want to be in a job just to make a living. So she helped me kind of create that list. And a recruiter called me about the gig at Farmers. And I mean, it really ticked just about every box except category, because insurance was something that had like never crossed my mind. And I did kind of hem and haw on that a bit. And I decided that it was worth, you know, kind of jumping in and took the Farmers gig.
We'll spend a little time on Farmers in a second, but I want to stay on the career coach piece, because I think sometimes, look, if you're on a bike and you fall and you break your arm, you go to the doctor. If you're swimming and something happens, but we don't give ourselves, I don't know why that is, we don't give ourselves enough opportunity to have professional coaching in our own lives, whether that's counseling or whether that's professional coaching. There still seems sometimes to be this stigma, like, you know, why are you doing that? But my God, it's, you know, our brains are the most delicate things of anything in our body, but we often don't spend nearly enough time in having somebody help us navigate our way and focus through that. And so kudos to you for, you know, for doing the piece that you did, because again, it sounds like it was a tune-up that you needed.
Well, and you know, the interesting thing I think that helped with that was while I was at Vonage and then again while I was at Jenny Craig, the leadership team had coaches, and you know, we had brought people in to help us. Yeah, I think it's so interesting that, you know, as you're growing in your career, there's a lot of, you know, there's the opportunities to learn up until a certain point. And then once you hit kind of a, maybe even director or vice president level, a lot of companies, they go, oh, you know how to manage, you know how to do this. And you don't necessarily. A lot of times you've just been really, really good at doing your job, but you're not necessarily good at managing other people, or you're not really good at communicating, or you don't realize the style you're communicating in may not work for everybody that works for you. And so I really appreciated that, you know, I've worked at a couple of places that took the time and spent the money and put the effort and the hard work in to teaching us how to be better leaders and not just be really good at our job and then promote you and hope you can lead. And that I think helped me feel really comfortable in, you know what, I can call someone and look for guidance and get some outside help. And I, you know, I think it's like, you know, seeing a therapist if you're going through a really bad patch. There's no shame in that, right? In fact, it's the right thing to do. And we're all expected to work on ourselves. You can't always do it by yourself. So
without the tools sometimes, which is crazy, you know? So you ended up at Farmers. You were there for, you know, for almost 5 years. And tell me a little bit about your time there. What did you like?
You know, Farmers was a fabulous experience. I think, you know, one of the most eye-opening parts of it was coming into work for a new boss who knew me, you know, through reputation and through the, you know, the interview process, but he had just confidence in me and gave me a lot of autonomy. And again, it was a really good learning experience for me as a leader on how to manage, because I looked at, you know, the runway he gave me to try things. And, you know, we had the ability and the opportunity to do some really great creative work. You know, before I started at Farmers, they had done some research that, you know, like what's the biggest brand attribute of Farmers? And I think the first thing that came to mind for most people was boring. And, you know, over the 5 years, not quite 5 years, but that I was there, I think we really shifted that perception. And, you know, it was an opportunity that that I was given to move the brand. And I had, you know, a fabulous agency relationship with RPA. You know, they're a great shop, and I treated them, I think, as a partner. And I believe they would, you know, they would second that. And that, that relationship and that ability to, you know, have a great team at Farmers, have the respect and the, you know, the confidence from my leadership. And then the team that reported into me and worked with me having, you know, a great skill set and being really strong and working hard. And then a terrific agency partnership. We developed some work that, you know, I'm incredibly proud of. And, you know, we won a handful of Effies. And in fact, you know, we won a sustained Effie that I think gets announced today as far as what level of Effie that was for, you know, the longevity of great work. And we became part of the cultural zeitgeist. I mean, you know, we were on talk shows, and you've got Neil Patrick Harris singing the Farmer song when J.K. Simmons wins an Oscar. I mean, there's the song and the, you know, the creative is something people love and welcome into their homes. And I think that's something that in the advertising space and in the marketing space, there's just so much noise. And yeah, brand is something that right now it feels like it's a dirty word, and it shouldn't, because even the best performance work, you have to want to see it. or you're going to ignore it. And so I feel like, you know, I think the pendulum is going to start swinging back where people recognize that, you know, the value of performance, if an ad doesn't perform, it doesn't matter if it ran or not. But if nobody wants to see it and actively avoid it, you're not going to, it won't perform. So it's marrying those things.
You could buy a billion impressions, and if it doesn't, you know, resonate with people, then all you've done is buy a billion impressions. So question, what's next for you? As you've departed Farmers, where do you feel like you're headed next?
You know, I'm really just looking for somewhere that's going to, you know, use my skill set of kind of where that intersection of brand and demand, and where I have the, you know, the flexibility and the freedom to kind of stretch out what I'm doing. And I don't know what's next for sure. You know, I like the idea of being a little bit fluid and making sure that the right thing is there. So I haven't put a, this must be the next job. The goal is just to do something I love.
Last question. Best advice you feel like you've been given?
I worked for, you know, my boss at Farmers when I got there, Mike Linton, was somebody who gave me, like I said, the autonomy and really acted as a mentor. And, you know, more than once he would say, you know, basically, why are you asking me? Like, you know the answer to this, and it's, you know, trust yourself. And I always appreciated that that confidence, and I think that sort of advice is what I also give other people. Don't wait for somebody else to make the decision for you. You know, get other people's opinions, but then trust yourself.
Trust yourself. Great advice as we wrap this episode of the CMO Suite. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Sean.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting. But your agency should. Uconnects provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnects today for a free demo. Uconnects, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.
This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite.